Let's take a look at sexual relationships with students now. In a yoga shala I practiced in Mysore in India in my 20s, there was a sign that read, "No romancing in the shala." My then boyfriend, now husband, and I giggled at it at the time, but it's an important point in regards to the student-teacher relationship that is not often talked about until it's too late and can have a huge impact on mental health. Psychologists have very clear regulations about not engaging in sexual activity with clients or anyone who is closely related to a client prior to working together, during therapy, or within 2 years after terminating the professional relationship. Unfortunately, while yoga teachers are encouraged to conduct themselves in accordance with the yamas and the niyamas, to date, there are no clear ethical standards regarding sexual engagement with students that I know of. To keep the student-teacher relationship safe and to hold the teachings of yoga sacred, I recommend that yoga teachers do not engage in sexual activities or relationships with their students. There's a natural imbalance of power in the student-teacher relationship, and a student may feel that they're not able to say no to the advances of their yoga teacher, no matter how well-intentioned they are, as they fear the possibility of losing their teacher, their sanctuary, their practice, and their community. Other students in the class may feel uncomfortable if they witness a yoga teacher making advances on another student, as they may no longer see the class as a safe space. It can be seductive for a student to have someone be endlessly present, kind, compassionate, and encouraging the way a yoga teacher often is. So it's not uncommon for a student to develop romantic feelings for a teacher and imagine that the teacher would be an ideal romantic partner or lover. However, it's likely that while the teacher is adept at holding space during the class, outside of the class, they likely have the similar foibles and relationship challenges to everyone else that the student is not necessarily privy to. And therefore, the student may have an unrealistic idea of what a relationship with their teacher would be like. It is the responsibility of the teacher, not the student, to understand the intricate dynamics of the student-teacher relationship and to avoid engaging in sexual activities or romantic relationships. I'm going to say this again, as I think it's really important. It is the responsibility of the teacher, not the student, to understand the intricate dynamics of the student-teacher relationship and to avoid engaging in sexual activities or romantic relationships. So what do we do when sexual attraction for a student arises? As teachers, we're humans after all. It's important to acknowledge that yoga teachers have sexual and relationship needs like everyone else, but that these needs must be met outside of the student-teacher relationship. The yoga teacher needs to look for their social, emotional, and sexual needs to be met outside of the student-teacher relationship, and to consciously cultivate a circle of friends and family to meet these needs. Feeling a sexual attraction to a student is normal. However, it's your responsibility as the teacher not to act on it. If you do experience a sexual attraction to a current student, I suggest noticing the attraction arising within you, spending some time after class inquiring into it, and I'm going to talk about what this might involve in just a moment, and speaking to your mentor or an experienced and compassionate peer about it. So let's take a look at what a process of self-inquiry might look like if an attraction to a student arises. It could be done in meditation, in your journal, with your mentor or therapist, or ideally all of the above. So you could inquire into, how do I experience this in my body? What thoughts and emotions are present? What actions or urges are arising? What is it about this student that I'm attracted to? If I acted on this attraction, what needs of mine would be met? How else could I meet these needs, either by myself or with another, somebody who isn't a student? If I acted on this attraction, what could the pitfalls be, both for myself and for the student? What is in the best interest of the student? If a friend was in a similar situation, what advice would I give them? Okay, so just notice what happens in your system after this inquiry process and by sharing it with another trusted person. If the attraction continues after this, consider ending the student-teacher relationship with the student so the student can continue to practice yoga without the interference of your attraction. If the attraction continues and it's mutual, after consulting with your mentor or an experienced peer, consider having an open conversation with your student about your feelings and about the ethical dilemma of sexual relationships with students. It may be necessary to end the student-teacher relationship. Under no circumstances should a yoga teacher be in a sexual or romantic relationship while the student-teacher relationship is still current. This is really important. Okay, so let's take a look now at sexual relationships with former students. So the APS, the Australian Psychological Society, mandates that psychologists must not have sexual relationships with their clients or anybody related to their clients for 2 years after the professional relationship has been terminated. 2 years. That's a pretty long cooling off period. According to the APS Code of Ethics, should a psychologist wish to engage in sexual activity with a former client 2 years after their work together has been terminated, they must first discuss it with a senior psychologist to ascertain if there's a possibility if the former client may be vulnerable and at risk of exploitation, and encourage the former client to seek independent counselling on the matter. I believe that this is also relevant for yoga teachers. If you wish to initiate a sexual or romantic relationship with a former student, then I believe that it's important to be transparent and open about the possibility of the relationship. So before starting a relationship with a former student, speak to a mentor about the relationship to discuss the attraction further and ascertain if the student is vulnerable or at risk of exploitation. And encourage the student to speak to an independent counsellor. If after this both parties decide they would like to begin a romantic relationship, I recommend attending relationship counselling together, at least in the early stages of the relationship, for support navigating the challenges that inevitably come up in this renegotiation of the relationship. So what do we do if we believe a yoga teacher is behaving inappropriately with a student? Do we just keep quiet in the belief that it's none of our business? Or do we say something and risk speaking out? In Australia, a registered health professional has an obligation to notify someone if they have a reason to believe that a client may take their own life, a client may harm someone else, a child may be at risk of harm, or another health practitioner is behaving inappropriately. As far as I'm aware, yoga teachers have no such mandatory reporting. However, I believe that as yoga teachers, we should adhere voluntarily to the same standards. Unfortunately, there are far too many examples of yoga teachers behaving inappropriately. As yoga teachers, we need not only to behave ethically ourselves, but be willing to stand up and speak out when other yoga teachers are not. APRA, the Australian Health Regulation Practitioner Agency, mandates that all registered health professionals must report to them if they have a reasonable belief that another health professional has done the following. Practice the practitioner's profession while intoxicated by alcohol or drugs. Engaged in sexual misconduct in connection with the practice of the practitioner's profession. Place the public at risk of substantial harm in the practitioner's practice of the profession because the practitioner has an impairment or place the public at risk of harm because the practitioner has practiced the profession in a way that constitutes a significant departure from accepted professional standards. They define a reasonable belief as having direct knowledge or observation of the behavior or a report from a reliable source, not mere suspicion, speculation, rumor, gossip, or innuendo. This isn't easy, but if you believe another yoga teacher to be behaving unethically and inappropriately, I suggest, if it feels safe, speaking directly to the yoga teacher in question to address your concerns with them. Discuss the issue with your mentor. And if the inappropriate behavior is serious, like sexual abuse or other inappropriate behavior that's causing harm, and or the teacher continues the behavior after your discussion, call your National Yoga Teachers Association and consider calling the police or other relevant authority. It's our responsibility to protect students from predators and inappropriate behavior in the yoga community, even though speaking up can be incredibly difficult at times. Okay, let's turn to supporting students who speak up. So speaking up about abuse is difficult. Victims of abuse can feel shameful and feel like the abuse was their fault. Barriers to speaking up about sexual assault include shame, guilt, embarrassment, not wanting friends and family to know, concerns about confidentiality, fear of not being believed. For male victims of sexual assault or rape, fear of being judged as gay, and for female victims, fear of retaliation by the perpetrator. It's important that when students speak up about abuse, we listen and support them. Just because a teacher is well known, well respected, and well loved, it doesn't mean that they're above suspicion. In his article, Yoga's Culture of Sexual Abuse, 9 Women Tell Their Stories, Matthew Ramsky shares allegations of decades of misconduct against the now deceased Patabi Joyce, the founder of Ashtanga Yoga in Mysore, India. He wrote, "The yoga guru is accused of engaging in repeated acts of sexual misconduct and sexual assault, enabled for decades by a devotional culture that saw him first and foremost as a benevolent father figure. For more than 30 years, practitioners have whispered about the intent and nature of Joyce's hands-on yoga adjustments, and rumors of sexual abuse have persisted long after his death. As a long-time Toronto-based practitioner and teacher of yoga, I first heard about Joyce's alleged behavior several years ago. Over the course of a 2-year investigation, I interviewed 9 women across North America who all told me they were victims at the center of the community's dark secret. Joyce assaulted his female students in public on a regular basis. The women described Joyce groping their breasts and humping, rubbing, or digitally penetrating their genitals under the guise of adjusting their postures, sometimes while pinning them down with his body weight. They're speaking out now in part because of the large reckoning around sexual assault and toxic power dynamics." Karen Rain is one of the women that Matthew Ramsky interviewed for the article. In an article titled "Yoga Guru Patabi Joyce Sexually Assaulted Me for Years," she shared photographs of Patabi Joyce sexually abusing her in class and revealed how this abuse went on in public for years. Here are the photographs she shared in her article. And let me read to you part of what she wrote in the article. "At the time, the idea that the guru of the system could be abusing me seemed impossible. I wanted to believe he was transferring a healing energy to me by touching me that way. Practicing Ashtanga Yoga gave me a sense of purpose and meaning. I was part of an elite group of certified teachers and advanced practitioners. It was my career and my passion. I felt healthy, fit, and capable. I had a sense of fulfillment. I'd found where I belonged. I also couldn't bear the idea of being a victim. The very word carries with it a stigma I had internalized to mean flawed, weak, or pitiable. In order not to feel or be seen as those things, I deceived myself. I believe that Batabi Joyce was not sexually abusing me. At times, I even tried to glorify the sexual assaults. I wanted to believe what some people claimed, and still do, that Batabi Joyce was transferring a healing energy to me by touching me in that way. Rather than feeling pitiable, that thinking would allow me to feel lucky, like I was being blessed. This may sound like consent on my part, but the power differential and my fear of the repercussions if I protested, losing my friends, my career, and my sense of belonging, made consent impossible. I was powerless. Here was a yoga master, a heavy man, lying on top of me, humping me while I was in compromising postures. I acquiesced. I endured. I tried to tune it out. I did not consent. I now choose to use the word victim because for me, it speaks to my innocence in a situation of injustice. And then later, Karen concluded her article with this. It took 20 years to find the courage to write about it. And that's thanks to the many brave victims of sexual violence who shared their stories before I did. The pervasive shaming and blaming of victims in ways both harsh and subtle make it nearly impossible to avoid further harm from speaking up. I'm sharing my story because I want to be part of building a world that is safer and more welcoming for victims to recognize and report abuse when it happens, where we will be believed and protected. I consented to publishing these images in part because they're evidence of Batabi Joyce abusing me, but also because he should be remembered this way. He was not just the smiling guru on the yoga altar. He was a man who violated women in full view of other people. I want the photos to be a call for everyone to examine whether they are dismissing or overlooking sexual abuse in any way. As Karen's article highlights, it can be very difficult for a student to speak up about abuse, and it's important that if they do, we believe and support them. Part of this is stopping the public veneration or worship of perpetrators of abuse. When a studio I teach at posted this, this image and these words, practice and all is coming, Batabi Joyce, when they posted these on social media, I let the owner know straight away about the allegations of sexual assault towards Batabi Joyce and requested that she take it down. She said that she hadn't been aware of the allegations, but she said that now that she knew, she would remove it immediately, and she did. Can you imagine what it would be like to see images and quotes like this of someone who had sexually assaulted you all over the internet? It's important that we support the victims of sexual abuse by supporting them in whatever way that we can. Okay, that's a pretty heavy note to end on, and it's also something that we could probably talk about a lot more. I wish in all my heart that it didn't bear mentioning, but unfortunately it does. Behaving inappropriately and calling other people on it when they don't is so important for the mental health of us all. Thank you so much for being part of this change. I'll see you in the next video.